supper hour or the supper time and heard Dr. Mala, and now it's after supper, even if we missed it. And we'll hear from those who would still like to speak. We've heard from quite a few people today, and I think just carrying on in this way gives everybody a chance to speak. So, who's next? Would you like to come up here
and
Hi. Just give us your name for the record to start with.
My name's Harriet Belial.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I just read my...
Sure, whatever you like.
I would first like to thank the Commission for making it possible for us as the natives of Alaska to express our views of the ANSCA, since the purpose of this Commission is to get the real feelings of the Alaska Native people and a study analysis that will result about the future ANSCA for our future generations. Hopefully, it will help all of us. I feel it is something long overdue, and I would like to thank you and the native leaders who have given of their lives and time and money for the fight for ANSCA. I do not speak lightly when I say this. My own personal history is a past I am certainly proud of. My grandfather, Chester Worthington, and step-grandfather, James Johnson, helped found the Alaska Native Brotherhood. My mother, Annie Worthington Johnson, the Alaska Native Sisterhood, back in 1912. With William Paul Sr., our first Tlingit Indian lawyer, my grandfather put the Tlingit Haida land claims in court, along with the other early leaders. In 1935, my grandfather died when I was 1 year old. He said, "I won't see it, my daughter won't see it, but my grandchildren will." Chester Worthington was a Salvation Army field captain and spent his lifetime practicing Christianity and nursing sick people in his home, plus giving land to the Salvation Army in Wrangell. The Land Claim Settlement Act for all the Native people has come a long way by untold efforts of many Native people who worked for their beliefs that we should get what we are entitled to. To be truthful with you, I do not have words of advice to pass on to my 7 children and 6 grandchildren about ANSCA and what should be done or decided by them in 1991 if the decisions are to be made then. I also would like to thank the Native leaders and many people who retained for us our privileges to exercise self-determination and retain what we can of our culture and strive for unity of spirit and mind amidst a diverse people such as Tlingits are known to be. They have, through education, succeeded as best as possible in the corporate structure handed to us through ANSCA. I can appreciate this all the more after having served on the CINA Board of Directors on programs and education on a volunteer basis. In our Indian history, every tribe is unique, different, and holds different beliefs, which makes it all the more complex and difficult to come to solutions on how to make shareholders satisfied in 1991. Having seen my own children struggle, start raising families of their own and do without, and also having watched many families and friends here in Anchorage experience personal economic hardships to survive in the urban settings, I personally feel that whatever is decided in 1991 by individual shareholders, that they must have an input and a voice, as the Alaska State Statutes for Regional Corporation states, membership must be consulted if that corporation is to be continued or to be dissolved. Many viewpoints and ideologies expressed here of the Native people must be weighed. One solution or workable agreement for one tribe or group may be very difficult for another village. Villagers are united now and have to be to protect a cultural way of life they have lived for centuries. As Frank Degen put it so beautifully, we are now regulated by many laws and regulations on hunting and fishing. The ANSCA has put Native people into the mainstream of the business world and presented a tremendous challenge to those who made it work. It should remain a challenge for our young people that someday will take over if our corporations are voted on to continue past 1991. I have hopes my children will play a part in this. What I don't want to see are decisions made by Congress or the corporations without first getting all the input possible from shareholders. I think that one thing that our corporate leaders must address is the needs and desires of the shareholders. I realize corporations are not set up except to make a profit, but I also think of those native people who have immediate needs and are suffering today. I see this over and over. My friend Eva Merrifield, a social worker, works daily with so many families who need help. Young people struggling to stay in the school district system to get their education. Older people doing without through no fault of their own. Many agencies slamming doors in their faces, yet they are proud people. The CINA was organized for that very reason and should remain to help all Native people without being regional. Tlingit-Haida Central Council services all American Indians and Alaska Natives in Southeast. Federal funding is shrinking and termination of services a threat. I do not know but hope to learn the land issues. I feel that our people need to be educated and informed as to what ANSCA is all about. Each corporation has a responsibility to offer something to its shareholders that our young and our old can visibly benefit from. I know this is hard to do. We do not need to have a have and a have not within the structures. Perhaps at the corporation meetings, the questions of the corporations being the first to buy back shares should be addressed. To be realistic, there will be those who choose to sell their shares. The oil companies and many big businesses stand ready for this. I like Willie Hensley's speech that said he went back to his own people for direction and to the elders for advice and included them in the NANA structure. May our leaders deal wisely with very hard decisions for solutions to keep what they have achieved, and may our people also have some guidance and directions for 1991. If Congress extends a deadline beyond 1991 for the future generations, how will this affect us? Membership and shareholders' input will be necessary for the full implications to be known. One very important aspect that is being overlooked by all 13 regions in the 7 ANSCA Act changes for 1991 is that the shareholders do not really have a say-so in the final decision-making process, nor have they had the ample time to really study or discuss or analyze how these changes really affect us. These 7 changes were presented only in one meeting here in Anchorage for the Sea Alaska shareholders. Option 1, individual choice. Are the people taking away the dissenters' rights? It troubles me that the board of directors can make the decisions to sell, dispose of our lands without consulting the corporation shareholders or obtain their consent prior to the sale or disposition under Alaska State Statutes 1005-435. To me, it means 15,000 shareholders have no real voice and gives it all its power to the board of directors. I feel that many groups and organizations are now acting and deciding for us on important issues of the changes to the ANSCA. We, as the shareholders, 15,000 members, need more time before these changes are made in Congress. I have observed much frustration and dissatisfaction among our shareholders, and I feel the corporations do not work and is not the vehicle for us. It will never alleviate the immediate needs of our people. There are so many of our people suffering, not being helped, people who have alcoholism, destroying homes and families, drug problems among our teenagers, many of our people without employment and financial security. By keeping corporations, how does that help them? Our corporations now do not employ our people. All these changes to the ANSCA Act must be put on a ballot and be voted on by the shareholders first, before going to Congress, not to be decided among groups and organizations. The land bank concept would again tie up the land by corporations for a 10-year period, then a 5-year period. During this time, the ANSCA Corporation's land cannot be mortgaged, pledged, sold, or otherwise disposed of. How long would our land be in the land bank? We would need to amend the corporation articles of incorporation to limit the authority of its board in this regard in any manner it thinks best. This sounds good, but at the annual meetings of the corporations, we as shareholders never have time or votes available to make such amendments because our shareholders are so widely scattered. Another important consideration that the land protection benefits of Alaska land banks are not transferable to another entity. How can IRAs or traditional councils ever get the land? I would like more time to compare IRAs as being a better vehicle than corporations to have my land and my children's land. So many of our shareholders do not have a good knowledge of the ANSCA Settlement Act. Corporations should have started 5 years ago to educate shareholders. I could not vote for the 7 changes to the ANSCA Act and feel that my children would benefit. Corporations and regional issues have succeeded in dividing our native people. It was not the intent of our early leaders who fought for the Land Claim Settlement Act. They wanted their children and grandchildren to benefit directly. It has now been 5 generations since my grandfather, Chester Worthington, and William Paul Sr. filed the first land claim suit. The ANSCA Act has not made much difference in my children's lives. How will it benefit them to keep corporations and our land in corporation control? I feel that it will not. There will have to be other alternatives or vehicles to accomplish this. 35 years ago, when William Paul Sr. begged the Alaska Native Brotherhood at a convention to take per capita payments, don't go corporations, they will eat your money up and the lawyers will get it, not to you. I can see the wisdom of this man because he was right. We do not need to keep depriving ourselves nor our children of their inheritance, and it rests heavily on our corporation leaders. Please do not let the money and greed and power and position cloud your judgment and make you forget your people whom you have been elected to serve. Their needs must be addressed and remembered, and we as a people cannot continue to depend on federal programs or aid or welfare to help us. It is now moving towards termination of services. My feelings is the time has come to make very important decisions and to put it on a ballot and to obtain the majority vote needed to carry it to Congress. For 20 years now, all the money and profits have gone back into the corporations, and it will continue to do so. I feel that our people are asking for more direct control of the lands and are entitled to this. We need more 1991 workshops and more communications between the shareholders and their corporations. Please give us more time for these decisions. I thank you for the opportunity to express my feelings on the ANSCA.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yes.
My name is Gil Stokes, from Wrangell originally, and now reside here in Anchorage. I walked in a little bit late tonight, and I was on the tail end of when they expressed the genocide amongst our Native American population. I lived in Manhattan for 14 years and worked for the American Indian Community House for 7 years. Unfortunately, I have seen these things documented into records that genocide was and has been indeed a fact in Native American life. I'm sorry to report that. The Public Health Service, United States Public Health Service hospitals from the 1940s up until the late 60s genocided our Native women. I came totally unprepared tonight. So I'm just taking things off the top of my head. The other thing I wanted to share was, and hopefully it's relevant to our Native settlement claims, and that is, I've been in Anchorage now. I returned to Alaska in the last part of 1982, coming from New York. And I never ran into any prejudice in the state of New York or in my career in the Navy. I lived in Maryland, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and I didn't know, I did not face prejudiced until I came here to Anchorage. I am likewise very proud to be a native from Wrangell. And thank you, Mr. Belial, for that nice report. I just have to second it, say that I do feel a great deal as she does. But my point is coming to Anchorage, and I found great prejudice here amongst the non-native population. I have many, many white friends. I'm not saying that they're not my friends, but I'm saying the population, as far as Anchorage is concerned, is very biased. They take a look at a native, whether they come from the federal government or the municipality or local. I've had my name in the register for the state now for over a year. I'm a professional counselor, certified. I have worked for Abused Women in Crisis in the Male Awareness Program. I have counseled for CINA. I have worked for Salvation Army, and I do volunteer work for Food Bank. I have gone over and over for over a year now trying to get a job with the state. I confronted the governor on the governor's picnic, and I mentioned to him that the person that interviews you is the person that hires you. If they don't like your looks, they don't like the way you talk, you don't have a job. I've been to social services here four times. I have even refused many interviews with them because they just turned me down. They don't even acknowledge that I was by there. I had one woman have the nerve to ask me, she says, I can't ask this, but since you're from Southeast, are you Tlingit? I said, yes, I am. She said, well, I'm not supposed to ask that. I knew she wasn't. I asked the governor at the same time. I said, Governor, I said, I have taken my own personal survey of the number of Native people you have in all these offices here in Anchorage. And I counted two. Two. I had some friends down in Juneau. I asked, are there many Natives in the government down there? The answer was no. I don't know about that. I can't speak for Juneau, but I can speak for Anchorage as far as the state government's concerned. I bring this, I tie this in with the Native claims, land claims, for the fact that people other than Natives are finding a great prejudice against Native people. They're jealous, for one. I don't know what they're jealous of, you know. We've been pushed aside. This is not only in Alaska. I spent 4 months on the Mohawk Reservation before coming back to Alaska. They have problems with the Canadian government and the United States government. This is all history. And as long as we don't unite, our corporations are not as close as they should be. Our Native people are not as close as they should be. And I don't like to think that because we're Aleut Indians and Eskimos that we are divided. The Alaska Federation of Natives started out to unite us Natives. And that has sort of fallen by the wayside as far as I can see now. So we have to close ranks and tighten up. We have to look at each other as Natives and to walk the way that we were taught, to walk proud, to walk sober, to walk straight. I had some other things to talk about, but I just can't remember them off the top of my head. So I do thank you for the time to express myself.
Well, thank you, Mr. Stokes. We'll be here tomorrow, too, so feel free. Sure, either one.
Okay, my mother is trying to get her Native allotment where my family built their cabin in 1964. She enrolled in 1971 with ANCSA and thought she would receive her land. Since then, the state is claiming the area, which is tentatively approved, which we used as our fish camp. She went to Alaska Legal Services to see if they would help. One person said if she wanted to continue her claim for the land, it would take years, which she doesn't have. Is Alaska Legal Services a department of the state of Alaska? If so, Alaska Legal Services is going to help if the state wants that portion of land. My husband and I went to the Department of Natural Resources and found the area was due for land disposal this May. And the area that was selected, that's where my mother is claiming her land.
Well, I can't do anything about individual native allotments. We've heard a lot about native allotments because a lot of people who had the right to native allotments didn't get a chance to apply before the deadline in 1971. And of course, a lot of people who applied in time still haven't got their allotments. That's something we've heard about everywhere in the state. But you're talking about a case, your mother's case, in which you say the state is actually putting the land up for disposal, and that's something I can't advise you on. I thought Legal Services isn't a branch of the state of Alaska. They have a man down there, a lawyer who is has testified before this commission, who's studied it and who's their man who's supposed to help in these cases. His name is Ron Flory. And I don't know whether your mother or you and your husband have talked to him, but you might go down and have a word with him.
We have talked to that person.
I see.
We've talked to some people in Fairbanks also, saying that no matter what corporation that you belong to, that you could still receive your native allotment.
Oh, sure, but the trouble is that, you don't. The native allotments have nothing to do with being shareholders or being members of corporations. If you applied for 160 acres for your allotment, and your application was for land you had used,
mm-hmm.
For 5 years, then you could apply, but you had to get your application in before December 18th, 1971. It sounds if your mother got her application in, but that there's some question about her entitlement. I can't really say any more than that about it on the basis of what you've told me.
Okay, well, we'll just keep going to that person that you mentioned.
I'd go back and have a chat with him. He spent 3 days with us in Barrow, and then he talked about allotments and he answered questions, and he's since sent us a long submission on the subject. He seems to know as much about them as any lawyer in the state.
Okay, and another thing has happened to us is I received my grandmother's shares after she had died last year, and I was reading in the Tundra Times that it was in the legal section that the people of my hometown had a deadline to meet October 1984 if they wanted to select lands. And I just found this out about 2 months ago, and I wasn't informed from my corporation.
You mean that your corporation was providing home sites? 5-acre home sites, 10-acre home sites?
No, see, I just read this in the legal section, and I don't even know how much this township's involved, so I don't know how much land actually is involved in it.
It's if you read it in the Thunder Times, it must be accurate.
Yes, I know, but what I'm saying...
I can't say much more than
what
that.
What I'm saying is that I wasn't informed at all from my hometown, my corporation, you know, from the board of directors.
Yeah.
And I've called Fairbanks, Alaska, and there was supposed to be a new group of, or a new office that has opened, I can't remember the name, it's some tribal council. But yeah. I think they should have a better, better way of knowing, of letting people know of the land selection deadlines on the radio or besides the newspapers, maybe.
Yeah. What's the name of your village?
Beaver.
Beaver. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much.
Thank you. Norma Jean Goodwin.
Thanks. Well, can we have your name for the record, sir?
Yes, Mr. Justice, my name is Archie Gonchok. Just a moment, since I can take on a few papers here, I'll like to share a few comments with you. Didn't know quite how to approach the commission, so instead of approaching the commission, I would rather share a few ideas and approach ideas. As you can see, I've come with an unorganized presentation. First, I would like to say that I had the distinct privilege of representing the village of Naknek on December 18th, 1971. And the story as to how I ended up casting our village's sole vote when the vote was taken as to whether or not the region would accept or reject the settlement is rather an interesting story. I was married, you know, for a short period at the time. And a student, I must admit, an unsuccessful student, but nonetheless a student. The official delegate was the mother of an old friend of mine. And she came to me and said that she didn't know much about the settlement and what was going on. And didn't know how to vote. That I knew more than she did. Would I represent the village of Naknek? And I was young. I accepted. During the caucus, just before President Nixon's speech, during the caucus, approximately six villages in the from the Bristol Bay area cast a no vote on the settlement. And that fact has slipped by a number of people in that the record shows, the public record, that the only ones to have voted against the settlement was the Arctic Slope Native Association. So the record should be corrected to include at least the village of Naknek. I cast Naknek's sole vote opposing this settlement. Now, that may be, a single vote, it may sound totally insignificant, but the fact is that the vote was cast by an individual who was not the official delegate sent by the people. For a long time, the thought haunted me as to how many individuals were there like myself who lacked the official credentials from the villages for whom they cast their votes for. There is really no record. And since then, I've been on what might be considered a personal hunt for justice. I still don't accept the settlement. In examining the settlement, I think we have to look south. And examine the record of the federal government in treating Native Americans in the lower 48. I think that the only fundamental distinction that we could identify is that up through, let's say, up through the 19th century and well into the 20th, Indians were by and large pushed around to make their resources available to Western expansionists. And with us, under the settlement, we were given the opportunity to acquire the finest lands in Alaska, provided, however, that we utilize the private profit corporate structure to do so, provided that we use the corporate structure in context of modern law. It seems that the state of moral development in the United States has come from the time that the government could just kick Indians off their lands to make way for the Western expansionists, to the point where today Indian lands can still be seized, although through the moral application of contemporary Indian law. One of the interesting things about, you know, our lands until just recent history, our lands were nothing but ice and snow. Worthless, wastelands. No one wanted anything to do with those lands. I mean, it was okay for us to stay there until the discovery of oil. It's not our lands that they want. It's the wealth that the land can provide. Once the wealth of the land is gone, those who have come just for the wealth will leave. And once again, our land will be nothing more than ice and snow to them. And we can stay for as long as we want to, until they find another reason to come and stay. In my hunt for justice, I turn to history, to see what I can wrangle from it, to help gauge where I'm going as a person. And one of the things that history has shown is that conquerors never go too far without their God. Wherever you see man on the move, you know his God is nearby. And by God, people have done atrocious things. I mean, you'd be surprised what is done in the name of God. So I went hunting for God. I found some very bizarre footprints. And by chance, those footprints were hot. So I knew God couldn't be too far. The lands in the New World and were taken in the name of God, the conquistadors' God. The conquistadors drug Christ with them. They use Jesus Christ as a moral prop to try to justify their conquest. Jesus Christ provided the only moral basis for that conquest. I mean, Indians were educated in the name of God. We were treated well in the name of God. I mean, by God, we were. Alaska is the same way. You know, these guys, you know, when they came north, they drug God with them too. And they butchered Alaska. You will find boundaries in Alaska that have been set by individuals like Sheldon Jackson. And they may have been doing what they considered honorable deeds, but nonetheless, their God was lethal. So, in my hunt for God, you know, I ran across a short two paragraphs in a book entitled Jesus Christ Liberator by Leonardo Boff, a Brazilian monk, contemporary monk. And if I may, I'd like to read it into the record. Boff says that the Christic structure is anterior to the historical Jesus of Nazareth. It pre-exists within the history of humanity. Every time a human being opens to God and the other, wherever true love exists and egoism is surpassed, when human beings seek justice, reconciliation, and forgiveness, there we have true Christianity, and the Christic structure emerges within human history. Thus, Christianity could exist before Christianity. Moreover, Christianity can exist outside Christian limits. That is, Christianity not only exists where it is explicitly professed and lived in an orthodox manner, but emerges wherever a human being says yes to goodness, truth, and love. Before Christ, Christianity was anonymous and latent. Through it, it existed and was lived by people.